is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
Hello everybody, this is Debbie Powell. I'm the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties. We are at our Master Gardener Information Session. We have a wonderful presentation that Maggie Murphy, who is a Calaveras Master Gardener, is going to be presenting. And the topic is Seed Plants Law and Saving Seed. Maggie, I have to tell you, it is an intriguing title.
Well, Debbie, as you know from our discussions, it's kind of gone back and forth with people interested about saving seed, and then what do you have to know before you save seed? So this particular presentation at the end, it won't get into a great detail about saving seed itself. The physical aspects, that will be coming sort of next, you might say. For those of you who are as old as me and remember CompuServe, I've been in different garden online groups and people send each other seed. And at the time, or I did call CDFA after I saw that we couldn't mail plants and cuttings, and they said seed is okay. Now, technically, there could be a disease carried on seed. If you do trade seeds, you can actually sterilize it. You can put in a light bleach and water solution. Unfortunately, people send citrus cuttings back and forth and all kinds of stuff. And across the internet, there are people who are mailing cuttings back and forth, and they really shouldn't, because we could have so many more problems. Japanese beetles feed on like 300 species of plants and flowers. And when you go to CDFA, it turns out the Sacramento airport, they got two bugs and they found one adult male over in South Lake Tahoe. And it says even on there, why are people so worried about one bug? And it's because if it really were to take root, it's already cost more than $460 million in damage in the East, that it really would prevent our nurseries from being able to sell as easily. It's a federally, the bug has a federal attention on the kinds of transport you can have, and it truly ruins so many crops. And it periodically shows up in an airport. And I actually, putting this together, and I learned, I did not realize the CDFA did that much at the airport. So they are really doing their job. And then you've got squash vine borers. Now, vine borers are not the same as squash bugs. There are people I know who are excellent gardeners, and they cannot get any summer squash at all. And it will be that clean the soil, they clean the bed, you have to make sure your plants are clean, you have to put your cover crops on and make sure it's all the way around, there isn't any space at all, not cover crop, I'm sorry, but your row covers to keep the bugs out. People say for some reason they still get in. And for all the effort, just basically lose your plant, that they eat right through, and they are something that is predominant in a lot of the U.S. As people start shipping things back and forth, the pests are not always on the same plant that you think of them as being, if that makes sense. Don't move plants. As soon as people start moving plants across the borders, we get more invasive species. So this is sort of one of my passions. It's like, we can prevent this. We really can prevent this.
Maggie, I don't want to scare folks, but the viability of some of these invasive species, say for instance weeds, it's incredible how long they can live. I think we all know about yellow star thistle, that they can live in the soil 8 to 10 years. But I know that some other seeds can live, oh gosh, a lot longer.
That some seeds just do last a very, very long time, and others don't. In vegetable terms, it's mostly the onion family that's going to fall apart in a year. But other than that, most vegetable seeds will last much longer. California has natural barriers. We have cold mountains on the north. We have the desert in the south. We have the ocean on the west. And mountains on the east, and this protects us from so many of the disease and bug invasive species. And the way they come into California is from us, from people, from humans. And the way to avoid that is for us all to be careful and to also spread the word. If you see somebody saying they're getting something from Amazon or picking up cuttings or whatever, why not buy something locally? So this is a really important piece of the puzzle to keep in mind, that we are naturally protected. But at the same time, people with our like climates do have many more paths. Now, here we go. This will answer some of the earlier questions. Labeling. Now, the law says you will put the correct variety on there. Well, I happen to like Tramontino squash. But if you look at the labels, well, Renee's calls it Trombetta di Albenga. And if you Google Trombetta, it actually means trumpet, not trombone. So she's kind of made up her own name there on her label. And when you look at the rare seeds, which is Baker Creek Seeds website, you'll see they say zucchino rampicante. Well, that just means rampant zucchini. And they left off trombone or trombocino. And you'll see trombocino on Territorial and Fegco. And then you'll see zucchetta instead of zucchino on Pine Tree. So the consumer is supposed to be able to compare products and know what they're getting. But this is one example where you can see that the seed companies try to stretch it to make it look like they're carrying something different. These are all the same seed. So even though Baker Creek and Linnaeus has different stuff I've bought from different people over the years, and this is the same Tramontino squash. Okay. Your heirlooms will never be patented. And you can see Renee's put heirloom right in the title because they like to do that. And this I wanted to show that people have country of origin in some areas. And the reason you'll see that is to import to Canada, you have to have the country of origin listed. So it looks as though Parkseed and Stokes use the same envelope, whether or not they're selling in the U.S. or Canada. And therefore, they just go ahead and put country of origin right on the seed packet. And you'll also see for the verbena, it was also the country of origin is the U.S. If it was a protected variety, I would think, say, even looking at the middle Stokes one, you see verbena imagination, and there's a number. They do put, most of them have a lot number somewhere on there so they can be traced back. Or if it's not a lot number, they have a little bit of a barcode on there. But I would think if it was protected, they'd put it right up there with the name. You know, that variety would always be protected. And my guess is they don't bother as much with the home gardeners. That for the protected seed, they're probably most interested in folks who aren't home gardeners. But it turns out a lot of things, even though they're hybrids, they can be open pollinated, because I actually have quite a few that on Flora Select say they're open pollinated and that they're protected. So that's this set of labels and the country of origin. And you can see on one, the germination test is 85%, so it isn't 100%. And the interesting thing about that is you'll run into people who want to swap seeds and send you five of something. Well, what if you get five duds? And even when I start seeds, say I do a lot of tomatoes for the plant sale, you know, that's why a lot of people put two seeds in every little corner or something, is that the seed packet can be sold. It doesn't have to be 100%. Like I said, somewhere I had a packet that was 170, and that's perfectly legal to sell.
When it says, like here, it says heirloom climbing summer squash. When they use the word heirloom, can you assume that it's so many years? Automatically, you would assume that it's a plant that was developed longer than 20 years, or how does that work?
Depending on the site, I don't think there's a solid guideline. Now, if you go to Seed Savers Exchange, they would have that they believe this or that. I thought I read somewhere years ago it was closer to 50 years or before. It does not have to be from the beginning of time.
Okay, that's good to know.
You know, a lot of the things we consider heirloom, you know, it is possible, or it could have been 100 years ago. I should probably Google this as we're talking. They may have been a hybrid at some point in time or cross, but most of us think of heirlooms as something that was always like original, but at the same time, you know, from Darwin, at some point there were no plants, and then there were plants, and then there were food plants, and then they evolved. So at what point in the evolution, you know, a squash machada different than a squash people, and at what point did they spin off, and at what point is a specific variety of, say, a Squash Pipo, which would include the pumpkins. Point is that, you know, a pumpkin as opposed to a big, ugly, watery-looking thing. I haven't looked that up, but I bet I can.
Okay.
As far as if there's a level. But pretty much if it says heirloom, it's definitely old enough not to be protected by anybody.
Okay.
It's been around. My gut feel says it's not the exact same across everything, but I could be wrong there.
Okay.
So FEDCO seeds came up to starting to work only in agriculture, and then they put up a website and they sell to the public. Because they work in agriculture, they don't have to, but they're in the habit of putting their germination test right on the packet. So you'll see there, you know, 817 and 80% on the one in the center bottom for Peafine cherry tomato, organic. And then you'll see 617 and 89%. For the long pie pumpkin. So they do put it there and you will occasionally see it. And that's what the date and the percent means. It's the date of the test and the percentage of germination they got for that particular lot of seed packaged in that envelope. And they don't have to do it, but you will find it on some. And now Park Seed, this was alfalfa for sprouting, and they gave me the full agriculture packet there. You know, no weeds, no other crops, no inert matter. Which there are acceptable levels of that. What the inner matter there is 1%. Noxious weed seeds, none. They have to keep track of the lot numbers and the germination percent and the date of the test. So that's the kind of thing you would see on agriculture seed. And okay. Although the test was in October 2017, if you look at the packet on the far right, it is packed for 2018. So October is sort of the latest they could do that if it could be sold through December and it's supposed to be within 15 months for retail. Okay, so now we're going to move into a different topic. Should we open it up to see if people have questions?
Maggie, this is Kathy again. So if we collect seeds, like I have hybrid like red seed poppies, and I collect those seeds, it's okay to sell those or ask for donations for those at a plant sale?
I want to say yes. I don't know which particular red poppy you have. If when you bought the seed, there was nothing about seed protection on the label. Yes. If you know the variety name, you can Google it. One. Most of the California poppies, you know, some of those come in red and yellow and white. Most of those are not protected. I don't think I've ever seen one that is. And then the bread seed poppy, and I should let Debbie talk about this one because we've discussed this before. I know Renee sells them and everybody sells them. It is legal to sell poppy seeds because you can cook and eat with it, but you might not know in California, it's not legal to grow bread seed poppies because they're opium poppies. Debbie, you want to add your little bit there?
We had a long time ago a master gardener that checked a variety name, and it wasn't that particular one. I think it was called Black Swan, and that was seeds that was bought over the internet, and that again was something that you're not allowed to grow because it's actually an opium poppy.
You said at one point you had a master gardener plant sale and the sheriff let you know something?
Well, it actually was long time ago. We had a master gardener that used to work for the sheriff's department. It was in Stockton, and there was a sweet lady in downtown Stockton that had a beautiful front yard. And it wasn't him, but it was somebody else that had to go up to the lady and tell her that she wasn't allowed to grow those poppies because they were an opium type of poppy, that her beautiful poppies actually had to be taken out.
But you can buy the seeds.
You can buy the seeds, right?
Yes, you can buy the seeds, and all the seed companies offer beautiful double varieties of opium poppies. Sometimes they'll call it bread block poppy. It's poppy somniferum, and in California, it's not legal to have those in gardens. So I thought one time, Debbie, that you had to take it out of a plant sale. Somebody was bringing them to the plant sale.
It was another county. It was another master gardener plant sale county, and they listed it as far as some of the plants they had available to sell. And so it was the Black Swan variety that was removed from their plant sale.
What if it's like a Shirley poppy?
Shirley poppies are fine. The Flanders Field poppies are fine. There's that perennial poppy that's gorgeous and a little bit hard to grow. That's fine. It's only the somniferums. They get really tall and they have the really big seed heads. So florists like the seed heads. You know, you can sometimes find those. I guess they shake the seeds out or whatever. But they're the big ones. things with the big heads, and I know a lot of gardeners who grow them, and I know a lot of people who are like, oh, I want some of those seeds. As master gardeners, we can't sell them. The original question was, can I sell the seed? If it's not a protective variety, you can. And because we can buy poppy seed to make bagels and breads and whatever, you can sell the seed. So that was a fun little difference.
How about seeds from plants that are still, new, like Monrovia plants, or that still have a patent pending on them?
Well, the patents are different if it's from seed or for asexual protection. That's why we went back to that. You know, some things are an exact clone, so you cannot take cuttings of something that has a PP number on the label. Most of those hybrids are not going to come true from seed, and the seed isn't protected. Now, I know some folks on one of the garden websites, there's one lady that likes to take two different hybrid hibiscus, the ones with the big flowers, and now you can get the small shrubby ones that come with dark leaves, and she'll hybridize them herself. She'll take one hybrid and another hybrid and cross them and share the seeds, and it's really fun over there because you can get in and everybody puts up their pictures, and you can have so many different offspring from one cross. The seeds typically have not been protected. They're only protected on a variety that is going to come true from seed, and usually that variety is sold as seed. Okay. But at the same time, you could buy Xanthos Cosmos at a nursery. They should have some protection level listed on it. Most of the shrubs, I'm not aware of them protecting the seed. But it should be on the label. And if it's both, which I've never seen, but if it were both, they would both have to be on there. Although not everything you have has a label, something in the tray probably has a label and you can look at it. But yeah, you as a consumer, you must be informed.
Great, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Should we continue? Okay, super, super.
This is KAADLP 103.5 FM. Sonora, California.
So now we're getting into hybrids. I mean, hybrids, an F1 is easy to consider. The dad plant and the mom plant are completely different, and the child plant is different. And the thing about an F1, because, you know, like I mentioned, I'm on that Victory Garden site, and some people collect seed from F1, and then they grow it, and they want to sell it to a friend or sell it down to the neighbors, and it is no longer that plant. Sun Gold tomato is an F1 plant. And what happens is when you have the genetics of the mom plant and the dad plant that are two different plants, and then they collect the seed from the child's plant and sell it to you, that's the F1. If you take a child plant, that's an F2. It's the filial 2 generation. And F1 will not come true from seed. So it's something where if your favorite plant is an F1 plant, you want to get fresh seed. Because for compost and the digging and the water and the space in your garden, it really is a good idea to get what you want. Now, some hybrids have been bred over generations, and they can become true from seed. So if it's not an F1, you have hybrids in that first generation and improved vigor and the yields and the maturity, the uniformity, you do get stronger traits. And actually there's hybrid vigor when they talk about breeding cows. If you want to Google hybrid vigor, you'll find that some of the articles are also about plant breeds. But, and I've mentioned this to Debbie a few times. I know people get worried about how plants are bred. And one of the tomatoes I'm trying this year, an indigo rose, was bred at Oregon State. And they made a big point of saying it's bred by traditional method, meaning they have, say, one plant that's really strong and another one that tastes really good, and they keep crossing them so that they don't get the weak plant that tastes bad, but they get the strong plant that tastes good, and they have to do that for years to get a stable seed blend, and then they can offer it to the public, taking the stamen of one plant and mixing it up with the pistil of the other plant to get your hybrid variety. I'm not a geneticist. I don't expect you to become a geneticist. I just have a few major takeaways from this. And we're talking an F1 hybrid PC. Do you have the parent and it's stable? That means the line will always give you that plant. It's been stabilized, and stabilizing a parent line can take another 10 years or something. When you talk tomatoes or peppers, it's something completely different. If you can imagine trying to snip the little thistle pollen parts apart on a tomato plant, and that gets into a whole nother level we're not going to talk about, but it is part of the reason that F1 seed is going to cost more. And depending upon what you're looking at, you can imagine that some of it has to be grown outside of the United States simply due to the cost of saying going up and down rows, even if it's squash, to be able to get the hybrid that you want. Open pollinated. Now, I touched on this, but in the seed industry for seed producers, and actually it should carry over to home gardeners who want to collect seed, open pollinated means controlled pollination. It doesn't mean everything's just simply left out to nature. The only time I collect seed from plants is if it's a pumpkin and I want to roast the pumpkin seeds to eat. Squash is by far the rabbit of the plant world as far as crossing with things. They cross readily, and I did once. Somebody gave me some seed, and, you know, you don't really know till August of September if you have some big watery thing. It's not pretty to look at on centipedes. It's not good for eating. You just wasted some of your garden space, your water, your fertilizer, your energy on something that didn't pan out. And I hit this a lot because a lot of us do seed trade, and it's amazing how many people out there haven't got a clue. So if you do seed trade, somebody might tell you, oh, I have the seed, and I have seen people do it. And on some of the sites, we try to gently educate people. It's like, oh, I saved this seed from the farmer's market squash because it was so cool. And it's like, well, you know, most of the farmers, even if you go to the farmers here, they're not going to have 400 feet between beds of squash so that the seed is. They buy new seed every year. So that squash you buy at the farmer's market is not going to give you seed that's going to come true to what you bought. And it's the same thing here with the rudbeckias. I'm trying to plant the one variety only on one side of the fence, and maybe then I can continue to collect seed from that. But I'm still buying seed for the cappuccino rudbeckia because I really like that one. And I think that I have my yellow ones a little bit too close to the ones that are giving me colors. And for $3, what the heck, you know, I'll just go get what I want. And the other note is Seed Savers Exchange. I mean, Seed Savers Exchange will tell you on each and every plant what you have to do to get good seed. There are people who will go out and hand pollinate their squash and then bag it so a bee or something can't come around and pollinate it. I don't go to that level. It's a lot of extra work. Seed Savers says for squash you need 1,600 feet. Some other things say 800 feet to a half mile. But squash is the most easily crossed, probably, of the vegetable seeds. You know, you've got summer squash, pumpkins, gourds, and some others can all be within people, you know, Kirkabita people or squash people. And within that level, they will cross. And it isn't always going to taste or look very good. So you can imagine your zucchini in a miniature gourd, and it might be something that just is a bitter, ugly little thing. It's, you know, there are people who deliberately try to cross their zinnia seeds to see what new kinds of things they can do, and some of the ones that are very easy to cross. But it's another if you think you're going to get what you expect if you plant from something that you weren't careful about before you collected the seeds. And it completely depends on the plant. I'm concentrating on squash because most of us do grow summer and winter squash in our gardens, and that is probably the one most people make the majority of mistakes with. I'll talk a little bit about self-pollinating tomatoes, eggplants, peppers, peas, self-pollinating. What that means is the flower has both the female part and the male part. So squash, you have a male flower and a female flower, and they're separate flowers. The self-pollinating flower now has both the pistil and the stamen, and the wind can pollinate it or whatever insect is out there if it's a self-pollinating flower. Now, generally, most of us find that the wind isn't enough. You know, sometimes here it gets pretty still over the summer. So you really do need to encourage your pollinating insects and such if you want a good vegetable garden. But self-pollinating only means it has both parts. So what happens when you have these pollen-covered bees? You know, what happens if you plant one of this tomato and two of that tomato and one of that tomato? You're not going to get true seed if you go, well, it was a self-pollinating plant, so I can save this tomato and collect the seed from it. You know, maybe if you put four together and you've got a different plant there or maybe some others, you can be pretty sure. But if you go for one of this and one of this and one of this, some of them might be true because some of them will get wind pollinated. But your pollinating insects are going to interfere with some others. So you might get what you thought you were going to get and you might not. Now, with all those qualifications, I do tend to save seed from my own tomatoes if it's not an F1. But if I'm growing something for the master gardener's sales, I buy new seed because I don't want there to be a chance that people expect us to know what we're doing and be the experts. And what if we sell them isn't what we said it is supposed to be? So generally for anything that I'm taking into a sale, I go buy fresh seed. So that is something to keep in mind, that you will not always get only one thing from one crop. You know, if you were trying to do an F1 out of this, you'd have to keep going with the one you wanted and experimenting. And that's why you'll see that it takes 10 or 20 years for some of these hybridizers, because you have to grow on the plant and get the fruit. And that takes a whole. So as master gardeners, I think everybody knows that we're not expected to be walking encyclopedias. We don't have to know everything about every bug or disease or plant or flower that was ever grown. We know how to look things up. And this is one of the sites, the Department of Food and Agriculture in their seed area, that you can find a lot of information on. Okay, so in summary, there are things to check out. Mostly they exist to cover the industry. So they're not as concerned with the home gardener and people like us as far as all the laws about hybridizing and protecting plants. But they do, because it is on your nursery label. So they do care about us, and as master gardeners, we need to be careful not to propagate the plants that have protections on them. The other thing, invasive species are spread by man, and that is something that, you know, if we care about plants, let's really get out there and try and educate people not to bring plants and plant parts into California, that unless they're working with a certified nursery, which if they're mailing into California with a nursery tag on it, they're probably certified, otherwise it will get collected at the post office or at the border. And the seed you buy is from technically a labeler, and they probably didn't grow it. The same seed can be $1.99 or $5.99 for a packet, depending on who you buy it from. And since you know the labeler is just putting their name on it, why not get the less expensive seed? Now, I still have favorite seed companies. I will admit that. And you can go to somewhere like Garden Watchdog and look up seed companies or plant companies, and people review them there. And some do, even though they're a labeler, it's possible that their storage facility is damp. It's possible that their transportation system isn't as good as some others. So you might find that you navigate to certain ones that always germinate well and such. But generally speaking, most of the seed companies are going to give you the same quality because it's coming from the same growers. And then F1 seed will not come true. Just, you know, yeah, you might get one out of 20 that came true to the plant, but you wouldn't know until you tasted it and ate it. And why bother? If it's an F1, and the name will always say F1 after it. If it's an F1 plant and you want it, get it. And open all pollinated plants come true from seed with controlled pollination. They can still cross with one another. And that's the picture of the cappuccino, which is also a floral select. And when you go there, it will tell you who the breeder is and other information about the plant. And then you'll see we have resources and lots of links. If people wanted, we could go to Reamer Seeds and look at country of origin, because that's a little interesting. Search field, put Reamer, R-E-I-M-E-R, space seeds, reamerseeds.com. If you go to them, they actually let you click on country of origin. And you can click on a map, and if you click on the flag for Colombia, and then you'll see they grow peppers and tomatoes in Colombia. That's Reamer Seeds gets peppers and tomatoes from Colombia. This is the only seed company I'm aware of that shares where their seed comes from.
So you can email Maggie, and she's great about, you know, responding to emails and answering all those questions.
You've been listening to Over the Garden Gate, a program presented by the UCCE Master Gardeners of Tuolumne County. I'm Linda Reevely. Thank you for being with us. If you would like to contact us for more information, remember you can contact our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912, or you can look us up on the kaad-lp.org website. Look for Over the Garden Gate. Thank you.